extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kalen Carr. We have now spent how many hours together over the past 24? What, like 12, 15? Like, I think I've slept less than I've sat in this exact spot and talked to you guys about Major League Soccer. We made it. 34 games. The 2021 regular season, Fiend, kaput, over. Decision Day 2021, easily, not arguably, easily the craziest of all time. The most teams alive on the final day, the most playoff spots up for grabs on the final day, the most seeding jumble that I've ever seen personally. I'm not exhausted. I'm running on fumes, and I'm still giddy. Like, I was dreaming about MLS last night. I woke up and I was like, oh, RSL in the final minutes, but was it a handball? I don't know. Yeah. Sporting Kansas City fans, get out of my mentions.
I'm just assuming there's screens everywhere. Can I get you this email from the mailbag to kind of sum it up perfectly? So this is Ben from the mailbag. He goes, fellas, I'm an LAFC fan. So once that kind of blew up, I knew I had to take my pain out on the Galaxy. I turned on SKC RSL match. My family, who's not into soccer, is like, what is going on? I explained the situation. I show you guys on YouTube where legend. My wife's like, oh, the ETR fellas, which made
even
me
bigger
so
legend.
Proud. Anyway, once Miramon would come on for RSL, I had a feeling they could get it. As David mentioned on the watch along last night, not sure why RSL didn't push at all until the 91st minute, but that goal, plus the bicycle to set it up, plus the screaming in my house from even my dad, who could not care less, was one of my favorite memories ever. Then switching back to the national broadcast to watch the Galaxy go out on Decision Day. Man, that is just what makes MLS so great.
How you feeling right now, Kalen? Because I keep looking at my monitors, and we had 7 and 6 games going on. And it's like when you skim a book and you're just looking for keywords, you're like looking for celebrations, you're looking for fans, you're looking for referees, you're looking for VAR. Like, I just still feel scatterbrained. Like, I'm trying to like make sense of it all still.
Well, first of all, the idea that you don't dream about Major League Soccer just regularly on Sunday nights is. Come on, dude. You love like, this is every week I've been on this show.
It's laughable. Yeah, you're probably right. No, you're probably right.
Yesterday was fun, though, and special. And I would say, you know, we were getting ready to make our pregame predictions. And the Red Bull scored in the first minute. So we didn't even get a chance to, like, really go through it. Just the day kicked off already into, you know, into gear. And then I think at the end, obviously, with the final moment of watching, you know, Salt Lake score and just them sort of dogpile each other and Pablo.
And then Greg Vanney, they had the shot on the sideline of obviously gotten his ear, whoever had the, I don't know, the cell phone watching the watch along, or maybe they had the scores, whatever it was on the bench. Being like, he's like, get one. We have to get one more. We have to get one more.
You
and then
the
desperation.
Moment.
Yeah. Oh.
And then the way Galaxy chart, they created a couple opportunities late. But you know, they also had given up a penalty just before that luckily for them, they missed, so they give him a chance at least to have a lifeline in the game. But yeah, it was just madness, as Decision Day is. There was referee decisions that, you know, normally I just sit back and say, okay, well, I'm going to let Instant Replay handle that. I'm not touching it because we were on the live stream. We had to dig in a little bit too. So it was a fun day overall. And congrats to Colorado Rapids as well too, who finished top of the West, which nobody was going to say. Probably not that they weren't going to beat LAFC necessarily, but just if you look at their season, it was always like, are they going to be in the top three? Do they belong? And I you know, myself personally had questions about it, but they deserve where they're at right now and home field now to get to MLS Cup.
Just two games to win, then you're there. And if the Revs don't advance, and they do, they'll be hosting this thing in Colorado. We are going to take you through every single narrative, every storyline, everything from Decision Day, the Audi 2021 MLS Cup playoffs, all the preview content, all the digging into specific matchups, all the news that will come. We will do that, but those games don't start for 12 days. We have an international break. We have U.S.-Mexico. We have Canada-Mexico. We have you know, CONCACAF fighting to get into the World Cup in 2022. And also we'll talk about the 2022 MLS schedule parameters. Those came out and they're of course set for to end a little bit earlier. So the season will start February 26th next year. So if you're a little bit tired now, just remember that as Pat Onstad told us yesterday on the live stream, preseason starts in what it was 75 days yesterday. So 74 days now. That is really quick. That's a small number. I think it's a preseason.
Okay.
But at this point, my brain is so broken that I couldn't do the math to tell you. Like, I just have no idea what it all means at this point. So we'll dig into that in the mailbag and so much more. We have a ton of your tweets, your commentary from the day. As Kalen said, we will get into what the coaches said, what everybody said after decision day. There are some celebratory press conferences. Vanni Sartini stands out in that sense. I mean, the man was on freaking fire. And then you have some saltier press conferences that we will get into as well.
We might pull Vanni Sartini in live because I think he's still awake from yesterday on that bender.
Might still be a little intoxicated for what he said in the postgame.
He just hit up Vancouver PR. Vanni Sartini picks up the phone. Where are you? What are you doing?
Get here now! Yeah. Get here now! Where are you? Oh, my God. Congratulations, by the way, before we get started, to our Extra Time Fantasy League season champion, Field Projections, 2,593 total points, the only point total that matters in Major League Soccer. They held off second place by just 8 points on the season. I'm going to sound this out. Nawo Joma was second place, so congratulations to him for almost getting there. Decision day drama of our own in the Fantasy League. Field Projections outscored the second place team 115-96 to win this, to take the title on decision day. So congratulations to Field Projections.
Did Field Projections have Demir Krylov in their team? Did that goal win the fantasy league?
He did not. Anders says he did not. That would have been even more fitting and incredible. We're, of course, going to talk Demir Krylov. Go to MLSsoccer.com for all the coverage for the Audi 2021 MLS Cup playoff bracket. You can also play the bracket challenge there. You have 12 days to get that one set, but make sure you do get it set before.
What does Field Projections get for winning?
I don't know. That's a good question.
We don't have
this year we were slightly less organized, which winners of the fantasy league in the past will probably be yelling internally about right now.
Yeah.
That organization has never been our strong point. So Field Projections, get at us. Extratime@mlsoccer.com, 401-206-0MLS. Let us know, like, an address, a name, something to honor you with, what you might want, what team you support, and we'll try to make it happen for you. All right, let's get in. The biggest story on decision day. What else? We're going straight to Los Angeles, courtesy of my shrine. The LAFC and Galaxy results will be what we know. I'm just kidding, folks. We're leading with Chris Wondolowski here. We'll get to the results in just a second. It's our Continental Tire Celebrating Soccer moment of the weekend. Chris Wondolowski in the lone game on decision day that was PFP playing for Pride. San Jose, nothing to play for. FC Dallas, nothing to play for. It turns out it was Chris Wondolowski's last game, an absolute legend. 171 goals is where he ends. He scores in this match, a one-touch finish. It is absolutely fitting. And afterwards, in front of San Jose's faithful, in front of his peers, basically, Kalen, these are his people. No other way to put it. If he's not on the field, he'd have been in the stands, shirt off, swinging it around his head. He picks up the mic for 2 minutes and thanks everybody, from his youth teams to his college teammates to his softball team, in the most Wando way possible. And I think there's going to be a press conference for him later this week. So, of course, there'll be more moments to honor him. And I hope there's an even bigger way to honor him. We'll talk about that in just a second. But 17-year MLS career, 14 seasons with San Jose. The only seasons he did not spend in San Jose were not by choice. It was when the team was moved to Houston. And then, of course, he got traded back. Had a nice career with the national team. But more importantly, double-digit goals every year from 2010 to 2019. And look, I might have had a guarantee in the past that that Wando made look real stupid, but he made a lot of us.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, he made a lot of us look really stupid for judging where his career might go, who he was as a player. But I don't think there was ever any doubt as to who he was as a person. And he will go down as the best goal scorer in MLS history, the most prolific and one of the most incredible people, personalities, characters that this league has ever seen. Do your best to honor the man. What did you feel as you, because it was a surprise to us. We had the discussion on the live stream of like whether he would come back, and we all said we hope he would. And then at the end, it's like, oh my God, Wando has a mic in his hand on the field and he's retiring. Like, this is it. I don't know. It felt fitting, but it also feels like we need to do his career and you know, him a little more justice than just 2 minutes with the mic in San Jose.
Yeah, it was a shock. I mean, we were talking beforehand, like during the match, to say, you know, what's going on with Wando? Like, is this the last match we may see him in Major League Soccer? And we're all like, no, I hope not. It can't be like this. This isn't going to be the way it goes out, or this isn't the way it ends. And, you know, privately amongst my friends, we've been talking for a while to say, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? And I met up with Wando a couple weeks ago in the Bay Area, and I was in a group, and it wasn't really appropriate to bring up those types of conversations, but, you know, he sort of privately hoped that he was going to keep going because he's still scoring goals. And we all have just become, it's almost hard to imagine MLS without Wando at this point. He's just been such an amazing player. The way his career has gone is just a story that you could not write. From developmental player, you know, coming in literally making nothing, and just sort of hanging on to a team, to earning the respect, biding his time, sitting on the bench, and then sort of exploding into this, you know, superstar, and shattering, you know, the record for most goals in MLS. It's just an incredible story and a testament to who he is. And I said it before, people ask me all the time saying, oh, you played club soccer together growing up. Did you always know that, you know, or what changed for him? How did he just sort of erupt to become this person, or how is he not discovered and earlier? And, you know, there really isn't a story that says, oh, something changed. He was always this way. I remember playing with him when he was 15 years old, and anytime in around the box, he would just find the goal. He would find the ball. Could finish with every single part of his body, just had a natural knack for just kind of finding a goal. And so, you know, you mentioned the part of just like the guy and the way he kind of went out yesterday, which was a surprise too, where he just sort of grabs the mic and is like, all right, this is it, guys, like, surprise. And, you know, because a player of his stature in the league, and if you go across any sport, the person who has the most all-time points, you know, Wilt Chamberlain or whoever it might be in any sport, if they're an active player continuing to break the record and retiring, you would bring out all of the bells and whistles and all that of like a celebration tour of what he's brought to the league. And a part of me does feel sort of that was a missed opportunity, maybe from our part or, you know, from the league's part, to be able to say, could we have done more to celebrate him? Or was he always on the front of the every marketing piece of paper? And people talk a lot about those types of things. And I think part of it comes into the fact that, you know, San Jose hasn't had the success that they, you know, would have wanted over the last years. But I would say for Wando, it doesn't matter. That's not what he was about. And I think in some ways that was sort of like a fitting way for him to go out, just saying, hey, I got my people here. I got my fans. I've got my family. I've got my community here. I'm going to tell you guys first, as opposed to doing, you know, the press tour or anything like that. And like the stuff we talk about him getting in the crowd, those memories even off the field with him, throwing his shirt off and freaking out with the ultras in San Jose. I mean, that's just who he is. It's not a gimmick. It's not anything that's contrived at all. He's a Raiders fan. He's a Bay Area guy through and through. Very much himself. So I'm proud to say that I played with him. I think he's a guy that everybody has rooted for, from the players throughout the league, and then I think fans as well. And I know you guys are in that group as well too. So I think it's awesome to start the show today kind of honoring a little legend. And I don't know. I could talk forever about the guy. He's just he's phenomenal. I hope that he stays a part of the league and kind of developing young players to be able to figure out kind of how can we create something like him? Cause I don't know how we won't have a story like his again, but I hope that he can still continue to leave an impression on next generations of strikers.
So he had 164 of his 171 goals after his 27th birthday. I just went and looked at the stats and did the math. His first five seasons in MLS from 2005 to 2009, and 2009 was the season he was traded to San Jose, and he exploded at the end. Or at least had three goals, which for him at that point of his career was an explosion, because he had seven goals in his first 5 years in 19 starts and just kept plugging away. And then the 18-goal season in 2010, and then the Goonies 2 years after that to go to 27 and double digits upon double digits, even 7-5 goals in these last 2 years. Whenever he got on the field, he scored goals. Dave, any sort of like lingering memories, anything that you would leave us with from your mind on Wando before we get into decision day? I mean, the real shame here is that the Earthquakes, as you say, Kalen, weren't in a position to competitively make this more important for him. you know, it's not on Wando that they're in the position that they're in right now. What would you say about Wando, Dave? What stands out?
Yeah, you asked about Wando memories, and I just think of the Goonies teams, and I think of Buckshaw. And as a fan on the East Coast who was going to empty NFL stadiums all the time, watching the electric atmospheres, even though it was a small group at Buckshaw, and the connection that Wando had with those fans and the way those teams were built, that was a huge moment in my fandom for this league. And you talk about goal scoring is the most glamorous thing you can do in soccer, and he did it in an unglamorous way. And he did it, as you said, late in his career and in a unique way. But he sort of not just shifted the way people view players, I think, but the way we all view goal scorers and how they can affect the game and the things Wando did great. And so I think he has a huge legacy, obviously, in this league as the all-time leading goal scorer. His name will always be brought up, and we will forever be educating the next generation and the next generation on what he did great. And as Kalen said, what his story was. And I think it's not just goal scorers. Like, part of what this league creates is opportunities for American and Canadian players to find professional careers that didn't exist before. And I think of Matt Turner walking onto a college team, being undrafted, and now being the starter for the U.S. men's national team. And you know, that list goes on and on. We talked about Kyle Beckerman last week on his retirement as well. Like, that's a huge part of this league. And this league is stronger and better because of Chris Wondolowski, because he carried a San Jose franchise for many years and kept them relevant in their market and was a huge part of this league. And Kalen said, maybe not always on, you know, every piece of public material or every piece of PR, but he also was a lot of the times. And a lot of what we tuned in for was, would Wando break this record? What would Wando do? How he can keep scoring goals, all the things he's done. So he's just been an incredible part of this league and an incredible player. And it's fun that we can have people like this. And that's one of the parts I think that MLS has that can be great is local players who care about what they're doing, where they're doing it. And for Wando, you know, we've rumored for years, well, does he go to SKC and come off the bench and try and win cup? Does he go to Columbus? Does he go here? Nah, was never going to happen. And now he's going to get to be a part of that club, I think, going forward. And I look forward to the statue getting unveiled.
The goals are one thing to remember and to cherish. I would say that the celebrations for me are just as much an indication of who he was and what he's about. His competitiveness, his passion, his desire to honor and bring in his teammates and say, hey, look, it's not just me that's doing this. Like, I just think of when he scores a goal, what does he do? He goes to the fans and he goes absolutely insane. You can see what it means to him. And he brings his teammate in, whoever scored that assist. I can see him in my mind right now pointing at the guy that delivered the ball, whether it be Shea Salinas so many times or whoever it was over the years, Marvin Chavez, et cetera, et cetera. And making sure that everyone knew this isn't the Wando show. This is the Quake show. These are my teammates. I love these guys. I love being in the locker room. I love being in these battles with them. This is what it's about to me. And it's really cool to see him go out on a goal.
So the Landon statue is scary, if I'm being honest. That's how I would describe it. And you just mentioned it. The Wando celebrations are off the charts compared to Landon. So I don't know what this thing's going to look like, but it's going to be intense.
Put the terror statue outside of the stadium, San Jose.
Put it right outside of the away locker room.
Yeah, to scare the opposing opposing fans and the opponents as they come in. But congratulations to Chris Wondolowski on just an incredible career, the MLS Goal King, with a legacy that lives on. And I think that's what it's all about when you're trying to build something, not as a soccer player but as a human. All right, let's get into decision day. You might be like, man, what the heck? It was so dramatic. It was crazy. We begin the Western Conference a little short shrift, I think, because they usually come second because the games are second when it comes to timing. So we're going West first because the drama was in the West, and we start with this story. Real Salt Lake are in the playoffs. They saved their season on arguably the final play, and now Sporting Kansas City fans and Peter Vermeer are saying, timeout, rewind to that handball. Yeah, we will. We'll get to that. But first, nobody believed in RSL. Apparently, everybody has the receipts this time of year. Ask the Red Bulls, ask RSL, ask anybody. They're going to tweet it out. Here's what you said. Like, oh, you guys doubted us, and look, now we're here.
Not us, though, right?
No.
This group right here, not us.
No, we thought you'd get in. Now, Montreal could have, but they didn't get the job done. Wow. I mean, a Justin Miram, 0-0, 90+5. Justin Miram, attempted bike, falls to who else? Demir Krylock, who finished it off. dog pile, insane locker room photos. RSL are going to the playoffs. They are going to be the seventh seed in the Western Conference. They don't care what seed. They don't care that they got to go to the Seattle Sounders, who will have Raul Ruiz Diaz and Joao Paulo, maybe Nico Ladero, certainly Jordan Morris off the bench back. This is a Cinderella story. I mean, Freddy Juarez is the assistant in Seattle. He's the head coach that walked away and said, I'm better off leaving this as opposed to sticking around. What they've gone through without an owner, with the coach leaving, and then to do this under Pablo after they were a yo-yo at the end of the season too. I mean, it was either good or it was really bad. It was an emotional moment for all of us. I will always remember sort of staring at the screen and thinking, are they going to do this? Can they put something together, Dave? And you had said, like, why aren't they pushing harder?
Yeah.
And then when the goal is scored, they went crazy. We went crazy. Everybody went crazy. What does this mean for RSL?
Well, I just think it's a moment of like relief and exhilaration for a club and a fan base that just hasn't had many over the last 2 years, from what they've had to deal with in ownership to also the play on the field. And I give a lot of credit to just the talent of the players. Like, you're talking about Aaron Herrera and Justin Glad and Andrew Brody, who came through this academy, who all started, David Ochoa as well, and were a huge part of this. And that's what RSL had been trying to build over long term. And I think that's what sort of kept them alive. For a club that doesn't spend money on transfers, that doesn't go out and get DPs, to have academy players that can come through and be elite in MLS. Aaron Herrera, 11 assists this year, playing as right wing back and right center back off and on, has been huge. And he's the one who serves the ball in to start this. And then some of the guys who have just been around here, and Demir Krylock's the first of them. He came, he could have left years ago. We saw the emotion he had earlier this season when he hadn't seen his family for over a year, and they came to the game and he was able to score a goal in front of them. Rubio Rubin, who's battled through a ton to come back. Now Albert Rusnak, who had his best year since he got to RSL this year when he had a coaching change and all the chaos that's gone around. Like, you just have to put it down to these players and their ability to rebound. The Timbers loss looked like that was it on Wednesday, that they had the opportunity, just get a draw even, put yourself feeling comfortable going into this final game, and they completely trip up, and then they come back with this win, and they shut out KC on the road, even with those injuries. That's something that I didn't think would be possible for them. Silva comes in and stabilizes the back line. They're able to really keep things in front of them over the course of this game, and they got some of the huge mistakes out of their system and have Everton Luiz protect that back line. And then, yeah, they left it late, but I think they put themselves in a spot which was, okay, we can push all out these last 10 minutes rather than maybe go early like they did against the Timbers and be behind going into halftime. So credit to them. And Demir Krylock, he's best 11 this year, 16 goals, 9 assists for a guy on a team that, again, lost their coach midseason because he didn't know what their future looked like. It's been awesome to watch. It's been awesome to follow for this group of players and for the fan base.
Here's some stats, Kalen, before I throw it to you for some questions from the fans. This is a bounce-back team under Pablo. After losses, they're now 6-1-0, 6 wins, 1 loss. Since 2013 MLS Cup in Kansas City, of course, they lost that one, frigid conditions. 4-1-3 against Kansas City in Kansas City. That's pretty impressive. I don't imagine many other teams in the Western Conference could say that. They have 1 loss in 8 games in Kansas City since 2013. They're 9-2-5 overall against Kansas City, not including the bubble in Orlando. They've made the playoffs in 11 of the last 14 years and 3 of the last 4 as they underwent some chaos in the front office at the ownership level. We've talked about that so many times on this show. Josh Stevenson's asked, no matter what happens now, RSL season has to be considered a success. Is Demir's RSL's most valuable player ever? Not best ever, but most central to team success and failure. I mean, that to me, this win, this club right now, Kalen, is summed up by the locker room picture. I know those can be sort of like cliche, but Dave said it is about these players and what they accomplished. Like, that has to be the most exhilarating feeling to be in that locker room after that win and say, we made it, we got there.
Only thing I will say about the record at Kansas City is they would trade all those wins for the one that they lost, right, in the final.
So, that's fair.
You know, the record's nice. You did a good job down there, but as far as it goes with, the group, and Pablo is a guy that I think the bounce back stat is useful, because you know from him as a player and any of the teams he's managed that the teams always have good mentalities and don't give up, right? That's just going to come from the personality of the manager and the players. And then, look, Krylik is a Real Salt Lake legend well before this match. But it just was not surprising that the ball would sort of land in a crazy melee around the box. And, you know, a Justin Miram overhead kick and a deflection or whatever it was, ball bouncing around, it just lands at his feet. And you know he's going to put it in at that point. And it's just, you know, we were talking about Wondolowski before and just sort of having that knack of being in the right place at the right time. And Krylik has that sort of clutch gene that we talk about like across all sports. And it's hard to put your finger on it, but he puts himself in the right places. He's always up for it. And what did you say, 16 goals this year, 8 assists. Yep. Like, you know, he's playing essentially, you could put him anywhere on the pitch and he's going to find a way to be successful, whether it's a late arriving run in the box, whether it's playing as the number 9 hold up play, bombs from outside the box, in and around it. Like, he just always seems to find that moment. We've seen him in the playoffs before. The bigger the match, the higher the stakes, he seems to always just come up good. So, you know, this team now is a dangerous team because they're going to go into the playoffs, as we've seen them do before, a little bit playing with house money. And we saw them beat that sort of vaunted LAFC team at LAFC in a similar circumstance. And it was Krylak again, who was the guy who scores that sort of karate kick, incredible volley from outside the box. And, you know, I wouldn't put it past this team again to do it. I know they're going to have to go and do it against Seattle. That's not going to be easy to do, but it's a dangerous team coming in there where literally everybody has given up, even to the point where the manager, he's got to make his own decisions, but you're going to take that personally if you're a player in the locker room to say, man, really nobody is sticking with us, and the pundits, all of that, like, Adrian Heath, we've seen managers sort of try to manufacture that in the past. This one actually, I think, is a little bit more real when you look at kind of the perception. And part of that is because of everything that they have been through and how much, you know, from the ownership to all the volatility of their season. So they, you know, we thought they were being maybe a little bit too pragmatic yesterday and not going for it enough. But we've seen before, when they open it up against San Jose or in the past, or, you know, past couple weeks, it hasn't worked out well for them. Portland, this is the way that they need to play going forward, as far as being, you know, tough to play against on the road, waiting for their opportunity, and making the most of it.
So can I just say the reaction thing to me, I get what Kalen's saying and I agree in terms of character, but I think it's, they play ridiculous games, they get annihilated, and then the next game they come back and they're like, maybe we won't open things up 100% and just play pickup soccer, and then they play well. And then what have they done under Pablo? Then they've gone and played obscene games and opened it up and lost 5-1 or tied 3-3. And then they've come back, which would be the fear going into Seattle, is they had the readjustment against KC and now they're back to the, oh, whatever, we'll just figure it out on the fly going into that one. But that's in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that is a long time from now. We'll see how the human spirit rebounds as well for Pablo Mascherini in RSL. We have to mention it. Everybody's yelling about it. Justin Guy says, please go to Peter Vermees' post-game comments about the officiating in the KC game. Obviously, a missed call that cost them the game, but I think there's a bigger story. Yeah, there is a bigger story. You can go read Peter's comments yourself. He was not happy about the handball that was missed in the 89th, 90th minute, whatever you want to call it.
Amadou Diaz tackle on Reynoso?
No, hadn't mentioned that one. I haven't heard much about the Tim Melia one in Seattle as well. So they've been in the middle of a lot of this stuff recently. And of course, on Instant Replay presented by Cheez-It, we've gone into all of it. We recorded the show last night. It's the same take that everybody else who's seen this would have, I think, which is that Justin Glad clearly touches the ball as Roger Espinoza is in behind. This is a handball. It really should have been caught on video review, in my opinion. Now, my first look, I said, ooh, I can't quite tell. I actually think that might have come off Roger Espinoza's chest and just taken a weird bounce because of the spin. So then you have a starting point of like, well, is it a clear and obvious error? But look, when you get some of the angles that they had, it is a smoking gun for me. His fingers literally move back. The ball changes direction. I think Roger Espinoza's reaction to it also speaks volumes of like, hold on, that dude just hit it and it went away from me. That would have been a PK that puts Kansas City up 1-0. And maybe all of this is different. but we can't relitigate it, just like we can't relitigate those other calls, just like RSL fans can't relitigate Aurelien Collin's second yellow card that would have had him out of MLS Cup in 2013, and maybe Kansas City doesn't paint the wall on that night, and all history has changed. We can't do it. Ooh, so wow. Kansas City fans, do Sporting KC, I'm just saying there's a lot of history here. If you want to go into this one particular call, and I understand why you'd be mad about it if you're a Kansas City fan,
2011 MLS Cup he wants to bring up.
Well, that's the point, right? That's the point, is that these things happen.
But
right?
Isn't video review supposed to mitigate Correct. Those circumstances?
I don't disagree.
You know
I
what's amazing, disagree. Though? Video review comes in, and there's a huge base of fans across the world who go, part of the game is the refs are human. They make mistakes. We complain about it. It's part of the drama. It's part of the theater. And then it happens and they go, video review. I thought I was supposed to fix this. Why are we talking about the refs? So I just like those people.
Yeah, it's look, the call should have been a handball and a penalty kick. That's what it should have been. Oh. It wasn't. But at the same time, Kansas City couldn't defend a 0-0. They couldn't score a goal against the team that has played insane games and has opened up like crazy. Like, no, they didn't have Pulido Austin in this game.
Midweek.
They didn't
have, gave up a goal 45 seconds in against Austin FC, who didn't make the playoffs and were already eliminated on Wednesday to set themselves up to get a draw and win the Western Conference. So
I am going
to... They lost their last three games.
I understand that. I'm going to say I read, you know, the press conference quotes from Vermees, and I'll say when it comes to this call, and specific to this game, I don't think you can take away. I don't think you can say, and I said this when Orlando had the goal taken away from them against Nashville and had to go into it on decision day. I said the same thing then, that like those moments, you are relying on the referees not to make that mistake. And I think from a player's perspective and from a manager's perspective, you are judged by your results. You are judged by your performance. And that has real consequences as far as your livelihood, your season, whatever it might be. So I think referees also should have to answer to those same sort of criticisms and critiques. Where Vermees loses me is the kind of, you know, sort of expounding on that to make it seem like there's some type of thing against his club specifically, when we've seen in the past, especially the past, just not even going deep into history, just the past couple weeks, that he's been on the benefit of some calls that have been able to help his team. So I he missed me on that part, but when it comes down to decision day and how it affects the different results, I think it's the right decision to say, you know, and I saw the Galaxy kind of do this where they said, look, we didn't get it done. It was in our control. Same time, it's tough when there's a lot of pressure on the referees. I just would have liked to see this one
be reviewed.
Be reviewed.
I would just like to see it be reviewed.
Go look at the manager.
Afterwards,
go look at
the pool reporter. Yeah, the pool reporter afterwards, here's the quote, and Sean Goodwin in Kansas City got this one. After checking all the available angles, the VAR determined that the non-giving of a penalty for handling was not a clear and obvious error. In real time, the angle of the referee's view isn't definitive if the ball hits Espinoza's chest or Glad's hand. I get that. Like I said, my first look at it, and Sporting Kansas City fans buried me on Twitter for this, was that I just couldn't tell. I saw it and I said, I can't tell for certain that this is Glad touching this ball. On review, after watching some angles, I can say from only my opinion, because that's all I can speak for, that it was a handball. But that goes into the gray area here. You needed clear and obvious evidence, because of the call on the field being no PK, that Justin Glad indeed did touch it. I think I see that, but obviously the referee crew did not. And in the end, Sporting Kansas City got to be happy with the 3 seed. As I said, they lost their last three games going into it. There is a bigger context than just with this one call. Though I'd agree with you, Kalen. Like, that's a moment where you're like, if you're Kansas City, you're like, we got to get that right, man. Like, it needs to be right. If you're the LA Galaxy, you're saying that, because without a win, RSL don't get into the playoffs, and the Galaxy would still be in the postseason.
Yeah, and this is to take nothing away from RSL, because you know they stayed in it and fought for what they got. But I think, you know, from what I saw, the referee said that they did see the handball, but that it was interpreted as not intentional, that it was not intentional, from what I saw as far
the,
as...
Quote, the VAR determined the action by Glad was not deliberate.
Sure. So that to me seems like not the best interpretation. It seems more of an issue of how you interpret the rule or the action on the field, because... the way I've seen handballs call is if you touch the ball in the box and your hand is not, it's, you know, it's almost all of those are getting called from what I've seen this season. So that makes it a little bit harder for me to understand.
Yeah, and look, deliberate is part of the laws. It's an offense if a player deliberately touches the ball with their hand arm, for example, moving toward that. But also, it's if it touches the ball with their hand arm when it's made their body unnaturally bigger. And I think in this case, in my opinion, again, you have to use those three words. I would think so. But we can't litigate this, relitigate this. It happened.
We did.
Let's give the Colorado Rapids all the credit in the world. They're the number one seed in the Western Conference. They have the lowest payroll in Major League Soccer. They have the least production in the entire league from designated players. I mean, Yunus Nnamdi has barely played this year. He's on loan. 61 points, thanks to a 5-2 decision day win against LAFC to get to that number one spot in the Western Conference to give them home field advantage for as long as they go without facing the New England Revolution. Robin Fraser, Porig Smith, every single one of these players, this might be the most impressive accomplishment in the MLS regular season this year outside of the Revs. And it might be even more impressive than the Revs, depending on your point of view, because of the amount of money that the Revs have spent, because of the presence of Bruce Arena. I mean, this is incredible. They've lost at home one time all season, and that was in the second week of the season. Now they get to come home and have home field advantage against everybody but the Revs. This is the definition of trust the process, because 11 games or 12 games or whatever it was into 2019, they were in the straight up dumps. Like, they had had a preseason in the CONCACAF Champions League. They had lost basically every single game. They were buried, basically. Anthony Hudson got let go. Connor Casey comes in. Eventually, Robin Fraser gets hired. And in a matter of 2 years, and not two normal years, two pandemic years, essentially, outside of that 2019 run that was so impressive when they fell just short, I think on decision day, by the way, of getting into the playoffs, the Colorado Rapids are the best team in the Western Conference in the regular season. They have the fewest. And look, if you're Seattle or Kansas City, and you're like, the Rapids have the same number of wins as you. They lost fewer times, basically the same goal differential, and they got it done when it mattered most on the final day of the regular season.
The big thing,
this is insane.
The big thing on this season for them is, you mentioned the DPs and all that, is the depth that they showed. Lalas Abubakar didn't start the first month plus of the season with an injury. They sell Sam Vines. They're able to replace him with Austin Trusty, who's a center back, Estevez, who they bring in as a foreign player this year, and he hits the ground running. Kellen Acosta at times, Jonathan Lewis. They've been all over the place. Brian Galvan has played at wing back as well on both sides. They've lost Kellen Acosta to a ton of international appearances, and they've been able to get performances out of Colin Warner in central midfield, who is an MLS GOAT. And I hope that his jersey gets retired for every team he's ever played for, so no one can wear 32.
Have an MLS Journeyman Hall of Fame for
him. He is the guy. When that comes up,
we should have that. That should be a thing.
Are the two.
Nathan Sturgis just needs to go on that as well.
James, I don't want
to
bring up bad
memories. Yeah, Nathan Sturgis just got to have a shout here.
Yeah.
Kai Kamara's probably in Journeyman Hall of Fame.
Kai's also in another conversation because he's like one of the best goal scorers in league history and MLS Cups and all this stuff. But so they've gotten performances out of all those guys. And then you talk about having no double-digit goal scorers up top. The trade for Barrios was exactly what they wanted. They wanted a guy who had done it in this league where there was no risk. They didn't go overseas and get a ton of players in a year in which you can't really visit. You can't meet players in person, all those things. And they are the number one argument for the point that there is no such thing as a bad team in MLS. If your team can't perform, then it's on coaching staffs, because he took this roster, Robin Fraser.
And front office staffs.
Yeah.
You have to include that as well.
Had been trending up slightly under Connor Casey, credit to that. But what he's done with them over the last few years has been purely giving the players belief in themselves, building systems around these players with your principles of play for them to succeed game in and game out, whether it's five in the back, four in the back, pressing higher when you're home, making teams run at altitude, changing what you do when you go on the road. So many things that Robin Fraser has done with this group. And I think you're looking at a team that they believe that they can step on the field and beat anyone in Major League Soccer. And it's been proven. We haven't seen a team like this win MLS Cup in probably 11 years since the Rapids won MLS Cup in 2010. And I would argue Omar Cummings and Connor Casey were in a different place then than really anyone is in the attack on this team. And I think that's cool for them to be able to want to carry this torch and say, this is a way you can build an MLS Cup winner in this league.
I'm going to go through some tweets here, and then we'll get your take, Kaylin. Nathan Gill says, if the Rapids can win the West with one of the lowest payrolls, no, the lowest, how do you get MLS owners to spend money on big DPs outside of the big market teams? Well, I would say that what the Rapids are showing you is not that you don't need to spend money on DPs. It's that you need to have a process in place, that you need to have a North Star that you follow no matter what happens. You need to have a faith in what you're doing and in that the preparation that you have can and will work. You need to look at this league, and as you sort of alluded to, Dave, find inefficiencies. Find Dom Bodgies. Find Austin Trustees via trade. Find Jack Prices that can come in. Find Barrioses. Find all these guys that when they fit together are greater than the whole. Now, it can help a lot to have big-name DPs. Let's be honest. If they had a big-time number nine, could this team be even better? Yes, this team could even be better. It could be even better. I don't think that's in doubt, to be honest with you. Go into your academy and get usable Sam Vines. Cole Bassett scores in this game. They have a bunch more guys that they're just as excited about coming through that pipeline. Porg Smith has put in place a process, a way of looking at how they're going to build this team and have success, and they've followed it, and they have everybody bought on. Again, go find yourself a DP, but it might not be a DP. It might be a coach. And we have William Sterling saying, our coach is like having a DP. It's almost not fair. First place? In what reality were the Rapids supposed to win the West? This is unreal. He has them playing their best and for each other. You do not want to play the Pids in the playoffs. Michael Pruitt says, does Colorado not having a big name game changer matter in the playoffs when it seems as though all the big names have muscle or joint injuries and they're made of glass at this time of year? The Rapids are in a position where it's like, hey, look, this guy's out. It's okay. Cool. We're on to the next one. Yunus Nnamdi's not around. Well, we're still going to finish first in the West. We have all these different pieces. I mean, this might be, as I said, Kaylin, the most impressive story in the league based on where they were in 2019 and the way in which they've got to this point. Like, it's not that you don't need to spend money. It's that your front office and your coaching staff need to have a really clear idea of how they're going to be successful and stick to it.
Yeah.
And build a culture that then can reflect that and get results on the field. I cannot give enough credit to the Colorado Rapids for what they've done this year.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I mean, spending money alone is not indicative of success in MLS. I mean, you can just go look at, I think, some of the top five spends, and a lot of them are not in the playoffs. Some of them are even near the very bottom of their respective conferences. So that's not doesn't necessarily guarantee success. Now, I wouldn't say trying to spend the least money in MLS is a recipe for success on Correct. The other side either. But it really is remarkable to see, especially in the Western Conference, where teams do spend, and we've seen some big names and powerhouse teams, that Colorado would find their way at the very top at the end. And, you know, you talk about these inefficiencies. We've seen other teams sort of follow the Colorado model a little bit. Montreal, I think, is a team that has gone out and tried to find inefficiencies and talent that have sort of replicated a piece of this. But really, Colorado has been relentless in doing this, even just this season, going out and getting, Marc-Anthony Kay, I think, has made a big difference as far as bringing even more of a winning attitude and mentality to the team. He's been tremendous in the middle of midfield for them. And then, you know, even just late on in the season, getting Dom Bodgie. If you just look at the last couple of weeks when they beat Portland, he gets a goal, the first goal in that one. Just last midweek against Houston, 1-0, Bodgie turning the box. This one piles on. He can come on late in games. I think his first match coming in when he was traded from Nashville, gets the game winner late. So I think that was against Dallas, which is another team he's played for in the past. So they really have been relentless. They haven't rested on their laurels as far as going out into the market and getting pieces that can add to their team and add to their depth. But yeah, I think you got to look at the manager and give him a ton of credit, because he's gotten them up for it. And, you know, even looking at the center backs position, going out, Trusty was a guy that I think Philadelphia was ready to maybe move on from, and they realized they could get him. Lawless as well had shown really well in Columbus, but they figured they could actually really build around him as not just a sort of a fill-in piece, but as a you know, as a centerpiece of their back line. So they've done this time and time again, and found a lot of value. So now it's just a matter of, you know, will they miss that goal scorer? Will they, you know, when it comes down to playing, if it comes down to it and they play Rui Diaz, does Rui Diaz end up being the difference and hurting them in, you know, maybe a conference final or whatever it is?
We'll just look at
Sebastian
look at
Blanco
they play
if they play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Reynoso. Who knew? And Nizhgoda. I mean, the teams that they're going to play have invested in that way. We'll see if it matters. Here's the last one on the Rapids here from the bot, formerly known as Zach. How about a new award for the player to hit the goal frame the most in a season? Call him the Postmaster General.
Nice.
Looks like Cole Bassett just edged Christian Roldan this year. Cole Bassett hit the post 7 times. He stuck with this team when he could have transferred to a big club because he thought that they had a chance to do this, that they could win together. Well, they're doing it, and they have a bye, and they have home field advantage in the Western Conference. They knocked down LAFC, who will not be in these playoffs. AK Griff says, is it possible for a team to faceplant harder in a win-or-go-home game than LAFC did tonight? It was a pretty big faceplant. By the time they brought on Carlos Vela in that first half, it was basically over. There are now reports out there. I don't know how credible, to be honest with you, I don't know the person putting them out there, that Bob Bradley's headed to Toronto FC. We will see what happens.
It does.
We'll see what happens with LAFC this offseason. It is a big formative offseason for them. The project that was supposed to win MLS Cup, that looked like it was on that path, looks like it just didn't happen for them.
Can I just say that Bob Bradley's LAFC teams were the most aesthetically pleasing teams in MLS history. So just out there.
It out there. Also in LA, because none of Texas and none of California will be in these Audi 2021 MLS Cup playoffs. The Galaxy fall short, and this was an emotional one. We sort of alluded to Greg Vanney experiencing it live. They drew 3-3 with Minnesota at home. They needed to win that game in order to be in the playoffs. They were not able to do it. They're out. But they won 5 times in their final 22 games after winning 8 times in their first 12. So that kind of tells the story. Most Galaxy fans I've heard from have been like, hey, this is sort of what we deserve, regardless of that handball missed call in RSL Kansas City. Chicharito said the same thing. Here's his quote after scoring 2 goals and really being inspirational in this game for the Galaxy. Quote, it's obvious we didn't deserve to be in the playoffs, even despite the things I've been hearing about VAR in the other game. All I have in my mind and my brain is that it hurts. I'm very hurt. Here's a question from Christian Pereira. Did the Loons play themselves into the playoffs, or did the Galaxy auto-goal themselves into outside the playoffs? Any thoughts on this game and how it transpired? I mean, Minnesota go from on the brink to the 5 seed. I mean, that's how narrow the margins were at the bottom of the Western Conference. And the Galaxy, you know, go into an offseason in which they've got to find a way to continue the momentum that they had built that sort of waned over the last 2/3 of the season. Thanks to injuries, thanks to a lot of things, thanks to a leaky back line.
I thought Minnesota deserved to win the game. I thought they were the better team. They took control of the match from the beginning. Credit to the Galaxy. That goal right before halftime gave them a lifeline. But I felt like Minnesota using the break and getting out on the break was something the Galaxy have had problems with throughout the season. So, you know, they missed the penalty at the end of the game. I thought they, you know, the Galaxy, yes, they were their own worst enemy, which they've been through large stretches of the season. Just there was opportunity to maybe bring some people down. I think Araujo had a good opportunity to try and bring down Reynoso and didn't do it. That led to the goal that his own goal that Stu Holden pointed out well on the broadcast. Just those little moments, right? And there's just been a bunch of those throughout the season for the Galaxy, just leaking really bad goals and kind of getting in their own way. So kind of a shocking end to the season because you sort of assumed that they would get in, but I thought Minnesota deserved to win the match and were unlucky not to get all 3 points.
You just, with the Galaxy, it's just all defensive. And they just haven't been able to put it together for 5 years now along that back line. And they've spent money and, you know, you just look around the league and clubs are able to find a center back who's at least serviceable over the course of the season. You look at teams, look at Tabassi for Minnesota, who came in the middle of last year. Look at Antonio Carlos in Orlando. Look at
what
Henry
Michael,
Kessler.
Even what Mike, same game, what Michael Boxall has developed into, even without Aiko Parra.
Henry Kessler in New England out of the draft. Like, they just literally have not been able to find a center back for the last 5 years. But I think you look at a team that had principles of play that Greg Vanney, you know, is excited about and comfortable with, which allows you to bring players in that will fit that a little bit going forward. Vellison, I think, is a linchpin in central midfield for sure. And, You know my motto. So Cabral and Grancier can be better next year. Jovelich can be better next year for them. We don't know what happens with Dos Santos and Chicharito. So I think it starts with Tecolosa. What's his future? And then what's those two players' future? And then from there, you really have to clean up the back line. But I think going forward, next year will be the first year that you can say definitively going into the year, this is something I know I'm going to get from the LA Galaxy. We haven't been able to say that since probably Bruce Arena retired.
At the very beginning of the season, we were saying Chicharito needs to get two or three goals for them to get 3 points. Like they needed hat tricks or multi-goal games from him.
And he got two and they didn't get three.
And it ends the same way. The season for them ends the same way, where they score three goals and they can't get a result at home, or they can't get a win at home. That's got to be 3 points, right? And that leads to the questions in the back. I think Bond has been good for them this season, but he's had to be better than he would need to be to be able to overcome so many of the, you know, frankly, really irresponsible defending that we've seen from the Galaxy this year.
By the way, Twitter is going fast and furious right now. We have a Toronto Sun columnist who, like, I don't know who this guy is, saying that the no calls have been made to get Bob Bradley to TFC, that this is way premature, this report. So, like I said, we will touch that probably when it's official. We won't go there until then. I have a funny tweet here. I just have to read because it made me laugh. Amobi says, is Adrian Heath the most underrated head coach in all of real estate? And I have to agree that for sure among MLS.com contributors, Adrian Heath would be that. But now, andiamo. Vanni Sartini and the Whitecaps, they are in to these playoffs as the sixth seed. They will go to Kansas City, and they will win in Kansas City, says Vanni Sartini, after a 1-1 draw against Seattle at home. Literally, the quote is, we will beat Sporting Kansas City. That's different. Also, during his post-game press conference, in which he is surrounded, and I mean surrounded, like literally his assistant coaches and staff are on his shoulders hovering over him. It's an incredible image.
It's like a family photo.
Ask whatever you want, he says. I will invent. We did a miracle, pure and simple. It was like a greatest hits of the best quotes in the whole season, and he's got like the entire top 10. I'm full of champagne. I'll stay away from the microphone. I don't want to catch anything on fire. It's so good that we don't play for 2 weeks because tonight we're going to get so drunk we wouldn't be able to play tomorrow. I mean, I'm a very cocky person, so yes, I thought this run was possible. I also thought that maybe I would be there for a week in terms of the head coaching job for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Anders, I think we have the clip of him post game talking to his team. Run that thing if we do.
You did something fantastic. Okay, I'm so honored and proud to be your coach. Coach, Salt Lake, they can send us to the moon.
Oh man, they can send us to the moon. Bleep, 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 bleep. Ah! Everybody goes crazy, starts spraying water. Walter on Twitter says, please analyze Vanni Sartini's post-match press conference. We need your takes. I mean, my take is this simple. Hire the man. You have to hire him, Vancouver. Even Pat Onstad in the live show we were doing was like, I really like Vanni Sartini. Like, I'm just going to tell you right now. I think his personality is incredible. I know him well. He's a great guy. I really like Vanni Sartini. I mean, they're going to hire him. It seems all but determined. But what the Caps have done, we've talked about over and over and over. Just analyze those quotes, Dave. Take us into a place of joy and wonder, thanks to Vanni Sartini.
You would have to be out of your mind to say, when Mark Dos Santos left, that the Vancouver Whitecaps would make the playoffs. And Vanni Sartini is out of his mind, and therefore he could say it, and once you put it into the universe, then you can make it happen. That's literally all I can say about this team. They played on confidence. They played on the front foot for the first time in 6 years as a club. And it oddly, the timing ended up working out in when they finally got home, when Ryan Gauld finally got into the team. They trade for Florian Youngworth. They bring in Brian White. And all of those dominoes just started to fall. And it reached a point where the belief in this team, and one of the interesting conversations we've had a lot over the last few weeks is, oh, what are the best teams the Revs have played? And what has SKC done the last few weeks? And all of these teams sort of soft schedules were kind of trying to find points. Vancouver went straight through it. They went and beat Portland on the road down 2-0 midweek after playing SKC at home where they won. Like, this is a team that they go up against Seattle in the last week, who has to win for first place in the West in a CCL spot. This was not a gift. This was not no offense, Dallas at home, who has nothing to play for. Like, Vancouver has fought through some legitimate opponents to get to this point, and I just think pure belief and insanity is what got them there, and I respect it.
I have this question for you, Kalen, and it is from Leanne in Kansas City. Who benefits the most from the awkwardly timed international break before the playoffs? It's not awkward. It's just the way it's set up, and I think the way that it is set up is pretty good. It's got to be the Sounders, right? No Rui Diaz in this game, no Joao Paulo, and Schmetzer says they'll be back. Jordan Morris is starting to work his way back. He played. Nico Adero, TBD, the swelling in his knee is a concern, reportedly. It's got to be the Sounders, right?
Yeah, so any team that's dealing with health issues, and for them, they've had the most of them trying to sort of reorient their side, maybe even give Jordan Morris a little bit more time to get training. And I know he's been back with the team for quite a while now, but, you know, getting more of those kind of playoff trainings in and getting guys healthy. And Ladero is the other big one, just to see how that knee responds, if he can get back going and into the team. We've seen, you know, how we know what type of player he is. So, yeah, I'd agree with that with the Sounders. I think for the team that it might hurt the most, honestly, might be the Colorado Rapids, just because I think they're in such good form right now. And you're seeing teams like the Sounders that maybe are limping a bit and need some time to kind of get healthy. Whereas you would want maybe for Colorado just to keep running this back and kind of push through. But yeah, I think those might be the, at least in the Western Conference, that's how I'd see it.
Anders just said it in our chat, and I agree. I think it might actually be Vancouver. Just running on pure energy and adrenaline right now. And now
tough to have that 2 week hangover that they're going to have. Going to be real tough.
For sure. So but what I think it's a great question, because we don't know the answer. And it's one of those things where we learn every time we go through a playoff experience a little bit more. Sometimes it's the team with the bye that has to wait the longest, where they really look flat when they come out. Other times it's the opposite, and that team's gunning and flying. Sometimes it's a Seattle who admittedly didn't end the year on a high, right? They struggled over their last four games. They're obviously getting players back from injury. And then sometimes it's, you know, the team that's ending the year on a high. For the Red Bulls, you don't want to break right now, right? You want to go to the next game as quickly as possible. So I think it's going to be really interesting this first round of the playoffs. And that's an unknown that we don't know how to calculate in these matchups.
It used to be where we play on Sundays, and then first playoff game would be Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that was tough, because and helped you in some ways, because you win that Wednesday. It's where it would start to add on would be later in the playoffs, is where you would have not had a lot of rest and playing that early knockout match, or playing match to get to the next round would kind of hurt. But I think now I still question the one seed a little bit. I know you want to have less games, of course, but it is tough to replicate that sort of playoff sweat. And if you win that first game, you still have a really good opportunity, because you step into the next match and you've already played a do or die one. So I still think that bodes well for teams that are in those playoff rounds.
Last one from the West here. Timbers worked over Austin, but we told you they weren't moving. They were the four seed. Ben T says, are the Timbers for real? Yeah, the Timbers are for real. I have them making a run, because I think that between Blanco and all the other game changers they have, shout out Dyron, point to the sky. Nizhgorod's back scoring goals. That they just have so much firepower. They do have some questions defensively, but it seems like they get it together this time of year. You don't think so?
Man, you got guys on your back line who give up penalties and make mistakes the way they do. That's not a playoff formula.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
I agree that Blanco is an MLS Cup match winner, but it just feels hard to say that they're going to be at 0-0 when he pops up for big moments.
Fair. Also, Ben T asks, what's our favorite Tabasco flavor? In the trash. Like, never consumed, Ben. That is the correct take on Tabasco. It is the worst hot sauce of all time. Eastern Conference, let's do it. It was a little less dramatic, and that's partially thanks to the Red Bulls getting that first-minute goal against Nashville, because there were a lot of sort of stumbling blocks that needed to happen for other teams to get in, and a lot of those relied on the Red Bulls losing, which they didn't. But Montreal fell short on their own, and they had their own controversy as it pertains to a referee call as well. There was a Romo Kyoto goal that he scored, but the flag was up, and it was not counted, obviously, and because it was called offside on the field, you had to have clear and obvious evidence that it was onside via video review. That was not there when they checked it, so it did not count. Obviously, Montreal were furious in-game. They were furious after the game as well. Wilfred Nancy said it was scandalous. Simple as that, that it was scandalous. I'm not so sure about that, but we'll save all the takes on that one for instant replay. But, you know, look, RSL get there and we sing their praises and we're so jacked up. Montreal falls short. And what does it mean for their 2021, Dave?
I've said this a couple times. I still think it's a successful year for them. No expectations, not being at home half the year. Yeah, Vancouver got over the line and made the playoffs, but you were 1 point out, and you look back on a year in which you've sort of reshifted this club. You've changed the name, obviously, but even more so, you've changed the way they're going to operate. You go out and you acquire Georgie, who ends up having an absurd year. I think he was third in the league on ground covered and like top 10 in minutes played for a field player. And obviously, what was it, 15 assists on the year for him?
I want to say it might have been 16.
Whatever it was.
Whatever it was. I think he was second in the league.
We're talking about a guy who was everything you wanted. He was the heartbeat of this team, and he's only 22. And he's only going to get better. And now you can build around him. And you saw what Mason Toy can do when he's healthy. And so you have confidence there that if he comes back, I think Brogiard had a good year. Kamal Miller was everything you wanted. And he is a legitimate lockdown MLS starting center back. You brought some interesting pieces in midfield and Torres and Hamdi. There's a ton to like. And the biggest one is that Wilfried Nancy is the guy. And for a club with so much uncertainty over the last few years, or maybe their entire MLS existence, whatever you want to say.
Maybe just their existence.
Yeah, fair. Well, I can't go back all the way to the A-League days. I don't know what the Toronto Lynx matchup looks like in 1995. This is what they wanted. Like, this is what you wanted to be able to say coming out of this year. And so, yes, it's disappointing that they don't get it done on the last week and they lose to Orlando. But if Sanusi Ibrahim just literally taps a ball in at the far post from a yard away, you are up 1-0 at home with a chance to go to the playoffs. And I think that's more than they would have asked for coming into the year. And
can I make a point about that? Why didn't Romo Kyoto start? It's better to be up and protect that lead, I think, in the situation that they were in, even if he can only give you 50 minutes, than it is to try to bring him off the bench to change a game that you're down in.
He could give you 50 minutes, that's why. He could probably give you 30. The question is now, because of COVID and the new rules, with five subs, is a guy who can give you 30 worth starting, which we would never have said before, but it's something that coaches have to figure out and try and readjust to. But it's a great question. I think you want a Montreal team next year that doesn't have to rely on Kyoto, 100%. Whatever health he has, and doesn't have to rely on Rudy Camacho, who had a great year for them. And that's one of the parts of Wilfried Nancy that's been huge, is the back line he was able to put together with guys that we didn't think were capable of playing. Their highest paid center back is Kiki Struna, who they traded for. He's one of the highest paid in the league, and he barely played this season, and I assume he won't be on the roster next year. So there should be a lot of hope and a lot of excitement for Montreal fans.
By the way, we talk about Freddy Juarez and RSL and the uncertainty there. Well, Thierry Henry walked away in preseason too. I mean, I know it's a different time of year, but Thierry said, I actually can't do this. It's not good for me as a person. Meanwhile, the rest of these players in this club had to do it and almost got there. So an incredible season for Montreal. That falls just short, but a big result for Orlando on the flip side, Kaylin. I mean, they had to have this. And we talked about sort of the drama that they were inserted into because they didn't get the goal that they thought they should have had. But then they handled it. They got the job done on the final day. And here they are going to Nashville as the sixth seed. Yeah. Not easy, but they're trending up at the right time. And, you know, look, 12-day break, who knows? They had some magic last year. They had some luck last year. Maybe it translates. Maybe Nani is available. He wasn't available in this game or didn't play. Maybe there's something for Orlando, but they have an opportunity now. They have a shot.
No, they do. And they've proven in the past that they are very dangerous in this knockout format. I mean, even MLS is back, obviously. And then in the playoffs last year, they are a tough team this time of year. So I think, you know, they proved a lot going up and getting this result. I think, you know, just sort of psychologically, emotionally, kind of coming down from the Nashville result at home and then having to kind of play for their lives on the road without their star player. So I give Orlando a ton of credit. Now they get that matchup back with Nashville again, which I think the last three times they've played have been draws. So
who
really close. What's that?
Who'd have thought? I said, who'd have thought? What are the odds?
Well, yeah.
Three games, three draws against Nashville.
Yeah, that's a good point. But it's going to be, they've got a good shot. I picked Nashville to get through to this next round. But I think I wouldn't be surprised to see Orlando come out with a win too.
Here's something. Well, two things. One, we've not talked enough about Daryl DK, which is ridiculous to be able to say that on this show, because what we spent.
This was a Daryl DK podcast.
7 months of
the
Daryl DK
majority
podcast.
Of like the, for like the first 5 months of 2021, this was a Daryl DK show.
And what he ends up on 10 goals and 10 goals, looked it up before, his goals per 90 better than Tati.
It
the
is.
Golden boot winner in this league because he missed so much time and he did it in the end of the year. Daryl DK scored 4 goals in the last 4 games of the season for Orlando City, including the clincher against Montreal. That's exactly what you want to hear going into the postseason. And for Orlando City, we've talked about, can Nani get back? Can Nani carry them? All this stuff. I think it's going to be have to be Daryl. And so the battle between him and Walker Zimmerman, that is must-see TV in the opening round of the playoffs. The one thing I think could be interesting is Andres Pereira has come off the bench the last 2 games in midfield, and they've been better when he's been on the field. And I know Andres is going to slay me in the chat for this, but maybe him and Jackson Mendez are the starters for this one. Mauricio Pereira also having a struggle. Maybe you start Urso as those 3 and you just press all over the place and you make central midfield miserable for Nashville and you make Hany Mukhtar's life miserable and you just allow DK and whoever it is on the wing, Vanderwater and Nani, Vanderwater and Mueller, Medji Michel, whoever's healthy, to sort of just hit on the counter and try and be dangerous. I think Orlando has a few different options about how to go about this. As great as their home field advantage is because of their crowd, they might actually be more comfortable on the road because they've just had such a hard time dictating games when they've had to.
All right, by the way, can we just talk about that Sebas Mendez goal?
Yes.
Between that one and Joseph on like the one-timers, oh my God,
you know
what a hit that
great
was.
Great when the shirt is off before it hits the net. His jersey is off before the ball actually strokes the back of the old onion bag because he knows how clean he hit it.
It's cold in Montreal too, man.
Look, we're talking about RSL, you know, getting theirs done and getting the results to go their way again. Well, DC won in Toronto on the final day. Shout out to Justin Morrow, his final game, honored as he should be. We've talked about his career and his contribution before, and I'm sure this won't be the end of us talking about Justin Morrow as it relates to soccer in North America and many other things that are far more important. But DC did their job. They just didn't get help. They needed the Red Bulls to lose. The Red Bulls did not lose. So the Red Bulls on the final day draw in Nashville again. Surprise, surprise. But DC win, but don't get through. And you have to go back and, you know, if you're DC fans, you torture yourself by going back and look at other results. I see a bunch of people tweeting about that game in New York City where they had a corner kick late on, but didn't keep anybody back. And then Andrade burns them and they lose 2-1. Well, if they'd gotten that draw, they'd be in. You know, hindsight's 20/20. There were a lot of moments throughout the season, but in the end, just not quite enough. For Hernan Losada's guys, we talked about the beginning and end of the season. It just didn't quite happen for him.
Yeah, it was the goal scoring to me for DC over these last few games. And I go back to the Crew game that I thought they dominated. They lose 3-1. They obviously got smoked in that NYCFC game. And then you had that Nashville game at home as well, where they tie 0-0, where they dominated. And there just wasn't that finishing quality, which is wild, because Ola Camara ends up second in the Golden Boot race. But if you're DC, your first question has to be, do we think we get a full year from Edson Flores next year? Can he be anywhere near what we thought he was? Because if not, you probably have to go out and get a elite attacking player to make things a little bit easier on the rest of this group.
Hernan Losada has been a broken record on this. He's asking for more investment. He's asking for, in his mind, better players. We'll see if he gets them this offseason.
Oh,
dude, DC.
Disrespect Tony Alfaro, this guy.
I didn't say a word about Tony. that came straight out of your mouth. All right.
I saw Anders messaging about it. He called him Tony. He calls him Tony Urso, so I don't know.
No, Anders right now is crushing you for your Jao Paulo takes.
Yeah.
Previously in the year when you called Junior Urso literally Jao Paulo. So that's where he's at right now. Yeah. If you wanted to know where Anders is in the chat. Let's talk Red Bulls. They kept the receipts. Finished seventh on the final day. I mean, look, Red Bulls, you extended it. I get it. You're on an upward trajectory. I appreciate the celebratory nature and the you doubted us nature of this playoff qualification for you. And I actually have you, I think I have you upset over the Union in the first round, which I bet Jim Curtin's not happy about because he's not happy about a few things right now when it pertains to MLS.
Yo, check his Instagram. So that's where he's probably flaming.
Get on the gram, baby. You got to take that Kalen Carr step to really go through the stories, see the posts, see what's going on with them.
You are on Instagram more than me. You keep bringing this up.
I know, but now I can put it on you. Okay. It's your problem. It's your addiction, not mine. I'm good. I'm just following your footsteps here. Nashville, yeah. Obviously draw. Obviously, this is just what happens. Goal in the first minute for the Red Bulls, Fabio, with a nice touch and finish to put him up, and they absolutely needed it. And who else? Hani Mukhtar gets the goal to even things up and get it 1-1. Hani Mukhtar, the free kick from an angle that nobody should be shooting from. Kaylin, you would call it D-Row-esque.
It was.
He's like on the end line.
Yeah, bad decision.
He should not be shooting that ball.
Bad decision, great goal.
Orlando already setting up a 7-man wall for every free kick that's taken in this playoff game.
it does take a little deflection. D-Row would probably take issue with that because he'd be like, no deflections. It's just going straight in. how this Philly New York match is going to be pretty bloody, right? It's going to be just like, it's going to be
give me a street fight.
Can I give you some stats that go to that right now? Joe Tanzi, who we loved having on the Power Ranking show on Twitter Spaces this year. The Union fourth as a team in total pressures and successful pressures. Fifth in successful press. Fifth in blocks, sixth in interceptions, third in tackles plus interceptions. They tied Seattle for the most tackles won in the league. So that speaks to that. Here's the not so great part for the Union and where it's a little bit similar to the Red Bulls. 16th in shot-creating actions, 15th in goal-creating actions, 15th in goals scored. They're in the middle of the table, middle bottom, when it comes to attacking metrics. They're in the top echelon in terms of screwing up the opponent and making the rhythm of the game more on their terms. And that is exactly where the Red Bulls are going to be at as well.
This is
going to be super interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I think for the Red Bulls, the fact that Philly plays the same style and won't readjust that at any point, I think there's more game-winning talent on Philly than for the Red Bulls. For New York, they need at some point for you to either panic and step away from your game plan or to try and play through late in the game, make a mistake, and the Red Bulls can pounce on it like we saw what they did against Montreal a week ago or 2 weeks ago, whatever time is anymore. Philly will never do that. And so now you're looking at two teams that play the same and you walk into and say, who would you take? Fabio or Kasper Schmeichel? Who would you take? Caden Clark at this age or Jamiro Montero? At Alejandro Bedoya, Sean Davis. I think they're two teams that are very similar. But when I look at a playoff matchup, I trust those guys in Philly to create that moment, that special moment and find the winner over the Red Bulls and the Red Bull system. Can't be an advantage in this game because they are playing against the same system.
Interesting. What'd you make of Nashville? Because we kind of got off track there on the Red Bulls. Kaylin, what did you make of this result for them? They haven't lost at home, but they haven't won more than half their games at home. They've drawn more than half. They're 8-0-9 in Nashville.
I'm super high on Nashville. I've actually picked them to win MLS Cup.
Big reveal.
Predictions have come out yet, but part of that was because literally everybody was picking New England, and I will not be surprised to see Bruce Arena with the trophy, as I have witnessed many times in my life. A couple I'd like to forget. I think the reason why I like this Nashville team is, yeah, you can say they didn't win. They've left points as far as, games they should have won at home or even sometimes on the road. Just, 18 ties, I think, is the league record. But there is something to be said for a team that doesn't know how to lose. And I think this team is used to playing in tight matches. They don't change their style. They don't change their formation. I think sometimes when you see some of the strengths that they have, especially with their back line, those three in the back and the wing backs and good wide play, set pieces, they can win at home. We've seen their record. They're unbeaten at home, and they can also go on the road. And they went up to Gillette earlier this year and got a 0-0 result. On August 4th. And I think they beat the Revs as well earlier in the season in Nashville. I think it was 2-0.
I think it was like the third game of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. So
fourth game, May 8th, 2-0.
So as far as that matchup goes,
receipts over here.
I think they could match up well. And then even when you look at that midfield, when we've seen teams play against the Revolution in the past, even, you know, looking at the playoffs last year in Columbus and the way they kind of really jammed the middle and midfield and just kind of like really got numbers in and around Carlos Hill. I could see with Godoy and Dax really getting, causing some problems there, clogging that up. And then, you know, they do have a game breaker in Hani Mukhtar in transition. He can find a moment. And then I already mentioned set pieces. So that's the case for why I think Nashville really has a shot. That said, playing against Orlando, I can see that that's going to be a tricky one. And when you do play those games that are so tight and you're not used to, they've blown a couple teams out, but it's been few and far between. It's much more been in these close, tight matches, which is the way most playoff games are. So I think that they'll be used to that type of play, but it does leave you a little bit nervous at home because they do leave room for interpretation. And if they go behind, or if Nani just comes back and has one of those games that he does have every once in a while, you know, it could just be one goal and you're gone.
My concern with Nashville is that their defense has made some uncharacteristic sort of like, oh, what was that lack of focus there that we didn't really see as much last year? But maybe even more so than that is if Hani's the guy. We know that. We understand that when he's on the field, they can win games. They can be a game-changing team. But if CJ's not on, if Leal's not on, if they don't get something from Ake Loba off the bench, wherever it is, who is it outside Hani Mukhtar? This just hasn't been consistent enough, in my opinion. So you mix that with a little bit of inconsistency uncharacteristically so on the back line, and some question marks about who's going to be that makes a difference on the attacking side if they can shut down Hani Mukhtar, Orlando City, and you better believe they're going to have numbers around him, then what? Then is it draw? If they're in a draw at home, and it goes to extra time and it goes to PKs, all of a sudden you introduce an element of like unpredictability, of randomness.
So the only thing I would say is this is the argument against every team in this half of this bracket, right?
In some ways, including the Revs.
Well, but I meant this half as in you're talking about Orlando, Nashville, Philly, New York, Red Bulls, right? You just read off the stats about Philly offensively. Cibulka, Sergio Santos, who is not healthy right now. And then who is it? Orlando. I said about DK. If it's not DK, Nani didn't play this week. Mueller hasn't been good this year. Vanderwater looked like he was strong and then totally fell off towards the end of the season. So this is what's fascinating about this half of the bracket is someone will step up and carry their team, and it could be any of the four. And I think it's really tough to predict who it is.
By the way, let's talk NYCFC. They went down a man, Gideon Zalalem. At home, Yankee Stadium, early on, ugly straight leg tackle into Leon Flock's ankle. Yellow initially, red card on review, absolutely the right call. NYC down to 10 men. They get back, they get a home draw, 1-1. Tati Castellanos gets the 19 goals. So does, by the way, Ola Kamara, who had a brace. But Tati, by virtue of, what was it? By virtue of assists, wins the Golden Boot presented by Audi. And we have a bunch of NYCFC fans saying, give that man his due. It's an interesting Golden Boot year because I'm just going to read off in normal seasons from 2019. 2020 was not one, even though Diego Rossi had 14 and 19 games and his 0.74 goals per game is better than Tati's goals per game numbers. Here are the numbers. 34 goals for Carlos Vela, 31 for Josef Martinez, 24 for Nemanja Nikolic, 24 for BWP, 22 for Giovinco, 27 for BWP, 22 for Camilo Sanvezo, that's a throwback, 27 for Wando. And then all the way back in 2011, you have D-Row with 16 and Wando with 18, who won it in 2010 before Jeff Cunningham in 2009 with 17. And now we're in a whole different era of MLS. 19 goals, that's not a lot. It was not exactly a prime year, I would say, for volume goal scorers.
Yeah,
in Major League Soccer. But Tati deserves a ton of credit. When you look at the underlying numbers as well as just straight up goals scored, and then you add the assists into it, the season he had was absolutely incredible. But would not have been in the same echelon as some of those other Golden Boot seasons.
And I think that's why you NYCFC fans are saying that. Why haven't you been talking about this forever? Well, he wasn't the Golden Boot winner 3 weeks ago. And normally, once we get to this part of the year, Joseph, we're talking about, is he going to break the record? Vela, we're talking about, are they going to break the record? So you're tracking this goal scoring where this year, the number being so low, it's been spurts for everyone. What's nice about Tati winning it on assists is Tati has been an Iron Man for NYCFC, and that's the other part of his accomplishment this year that should be celebrated. And I think it is, because he has been the central force for this attack. Maxi Morales has missed a ton of time. You've had the wingers completely be rotated, players coming in mid-season, players getting hurt, all of that. You had Anton Tinnerholm go out with the injury as well. Tati has been the center of the attack, and he's been the finisher for this team. And that's why it's great that he wins this award. And I think it's fitting that he wins it on assists because of what he's done over the course of this season for that club.
Yeah, he's more than just a goal scorer.
Yeah, when he's been critiqued, truly, it's been that he's been kind of hot and cold too, right? And,
yeah.
There were stretches where he didn't look confident in front of frame, or he wasn't quite the same. And to win on Golden Boot, I think in a season where we've seen guys just generally, to win the Golden Boot, you have to just be on a heater the whole year. And that was not the case for him, which is also a testament to his talent and just how many chances he gets, the expected goals, I think sort of will help demonstrate that as well. That, you know, even in just this last match, getting a red card at home, and then they gave up a goal within the next, I think, 5-10 minutes. And I was saying, oh, you know, that's probably the end of that. And then Ola Kamara scored, and, you know, we were going through decision day, of course, as far as who gets in the playoffs and who's out, but we were also tracking the Golden Boot, and it seemed like for a minute that he wasn't going to get it. And because they were going to be man down and the game was just going the other direction, but he stepped up in a big, I think clutch goal, great header. And you could see afterwards his reaction. And I think, you know, that personality reveals that he's, you know, not just kind of a poacher or a goal scorer here, but he was actually, carries a big leadership role on that team. And I thought New York City generally yesterday showed a lot of their resolve, because that's a game where down a man, down a goal right away like that, it would have been a little bit easier to kind of cave in, and they did anything but. So I actually think New York City will be big favorites. I would have them as clear favorites. I wouldn't say big favorites. I'd say clear favorites over Atlanta United, who to me have not looked their best and had to come from behind against Cincinnati on the last day of the season.
That's right where I was going. So I have the headline here, and the rundown is, are Atlanta United destined to flop? I'm just going to read from, 2-1 win in Cincinnati, and that's all well and good. And Jose Martinez had a nice goal, and that's exactly what you want ahead of the playoffs here. And Rob Valentino and Gonzalo Pineda have done an amazing job. I'm just going to read straight from Doyle's column, which you go check out. It's the tiers of contenders, quote unquote, for the Audi 2021 MLS Cup playoffs. Here's from Doyle. These are his words. Atlanta have just one win against a playoff team all year. 3 exclamation marks on that one from Doyle. They had 15 cracks at it under 3 different coaches. They had just the one win. The 5 stripes in the second half of the season were really good exploiting defensively disorganized teams. Those are, by definition, not the kinds of teams that you meet in the playoffs. So we'll talk a lot more about Atlanta United, NYCFC, and that matchup and what maybe Atlanta can do. But we saw it here recently for them. If they're not out in the open field against a team that's scrambling, they just don't got much. And I especially would look at that Red Bulls game and say that. It's just they didn't create anything in that. They didn't have Araujo that was a difference maker there. Barco wasn't able to be that guy. Marcelino Moreno wasn't in that match. Jose Martinez has not looked like Jose Martinez, and the chance creation to him has not looked the same as it has been in previous years.
I wish we had a soundboard for this show. We'd have you talking about the father like on March 3rd, and we'd also need us talking about Demir Krylak as the true 8 next to Kyle Beckerman and Rusnak from like 4 years ago when they finally signed him.
This is an assignment for Anders. Go... just pull our terrible takes from the many places that they exist and just start dropping them in the show on us. We'll see. He says it's easy. Great. Awesome. Sweet. Revs. We'll finish the Eastern Conference with the Revs. They celebrated the Shield after a loss to Inter Miami, which doesn't feel as good, but they still really enjoyed it in New England from the start of the day with Carlos Heel out in the parking lot with the Midnight Riders and the other supporters out there getting his award from the fans as their player of the season. To celebrating the Shield afterwards. And of course, it's a disappointing, the 1-0 loss against Inter Miami, who had really nothing to play for other than pride in this one. We'll get to the interesting quote maybe from Pizarro here in just a second, Dave. You unearthed that one for us. But here's a quote from Bruce Arena. I'm happy for the fans, especially the ones that have been here for 26 years, if there are any. Bruce's greatest hits continue. He did not touch the supporter shield, or at least wasn't pictured with the supporter shield last night, which is a true disappointment for me. I really feel hurt by that. But apparently he has a partially torn Achilles tendon, and that was part of the reason why. I don't know. The shield must be so heavy. Like, he didn't want to be unbalanced.
Andrew Farrell made it seem pretty heavy. He made Matt Turner hold it with him while he was taking pictures. He's like, this thing's really heavy in the video.
So congratulations to the Revs. They do not extend their points record. So it holds where it's at. They didn't get to 76. They're staying at 73 points, which is still an incredible season for them. That's 19 better than second place in the East, which is just an absurd number, to be honest with you. Elijah, though, hit us up and said New England aren't going to go all the way to MLS Cup, and they'll get eliminated in a very boring way. What do you think about that? What first reactions to that? Because so many people are picking them, myself included, for MLS Cup. It feels inevitable, especially since they can play two games at home to get the MLS Cup to host the thing. And Adam Buxa supposedly is going to be back per Charlie Davies last night, just sort of precautionary for him. You know, whether it be Tejan or Carlos Heel, who's the best chance creator by the numbers in MLS history, and I think the MVP, or Bo and Buxa all throughout. They just have so many pieces. Matt Turner, you know, they're just built to win. And in the playoffs, that seems to matter. And they've played on the margins all year long. We've talked over and over about those one-goal victories. It feels sort of inevitable to me. And maybe that's a tough place to be if you're the Revs. I don't know.
Yeah, you think, any loss by them is an upset, even in MLS Cup, because of the year they had. But to me, the margins thing is, we know they can win tight games. But if you leave games tight, you leave yourself the opportunity to give up a late goal, to give up a fluky goal, and lose in a one-game playoff. And that's just the reality. It's tough to say that this, when I think back to LAFC setting the points record, okay, the question was, could they win the playoffs? The Revs won in the playoffs last year. So it's really hard to say where they're going to, but I think NYCFC or Atlanta, but probably NYCFC in the first round after this long of a layoff for them, it's a tough test.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll have wall-to-wall coverage of the playoffs, and we do have Eastern Conference and Western Conference previews up at MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app now. So go check those out. Go check out the bracket. Get your bracket challenge filled out ahead of time, or do it right before at the deadline. It is up to you. We'll finish with the mailbag really quickly here. We're talking 2021 and the finish of the season, but we already know what 2022 will look like here as it pertains to the schedule. Season starts February 26th. Decision day is October 9th, and MLS Cup will be on November 5th before the World Cup in Qatar. Charlotte will play in the East. Nashville are headed to the West, but then back to the East, we assume, after more expansion teams come in St. Louis and wherever else. 34-game season, of course, 17 home, 17 away. You're going to play your conference opponents twice and then 8 non-conference opponents once. So that will then mean that you miss out on 6 teams. So you'll play all but 6 teams. The schedule is going to consist of all weekend matches. There'll be 5 or fewer midweek matches per team. They're going to try to put a month to month, May, June, and July, and then 2 in August. And there will not be consecutive weeks of midweek matches. Now, you also have Leagues Cup, and I assume U.S. Open Cup will be back, and Canadian Championship, and CCL. So there'll all be these other things to kind of sink your teeth into. And MLS is going to avoid scheduling matches during FIFA international windows in March, June, and September. Only at a team's request will they schedule during that March window or the second weekend of the June double window. So that's where it's at right now. Any other mail we got?
We do. We have one from Jared in Milwaukee who said, what of these MLS what-if scenarios would have resulted in the most points in 2021? So you gave us 5. NYCFC with a healthy Hebert, Sporting KC with a healthy and available Pulido, Seattle with a healthy Jordan Morris, Orlando with DK available for the entire year, and if the Red Bulls had kept Brian White.
Okay, so mark out the Brian White one, because they weren't even really playing him, so that one's off the table immediately. I think you got to think of this in like points potentially gained. Now, how many more points would Seattle have with Jordan Morris? I mean, they were missing.
Are we not going to add if Dom Baji was on the Rapids all year?
that can replace that, the Brian White one.
Better you late than never.
Personally, Caleb. Replace the Brian White one. What would you say here? I mean, because Seattle still had 60 points, but you would think Jordan Morris would have helped a ton. He would have diversified that attack in a big way and given them a different sort of look, the counterattack look that maybe it's sometimes that speed in behind that they didn't necessarily have in the way they were playing outside of the wingbacks getting forward so much. I think DK, he only played 1,300 minutes this year. That could be a big one. And Orlando only had 51 points. So maybe DK might be my pick.
I'm taking Morris. Jordan Morris. I mean, Seattle was already, you know, like you mentioned, Seattle was already close to the very top of the table. And if you add Jordan Morris to that mix, you have to figure, you know, that's probably another, I don't know, 9 points right there at least. So I just feel like that's still not enough to catch New England, which has shown how good of a season they've had. But I think Jordan Morris would give you the best chance of those options as far as just being a unique. He is just, you know, a singular type player in MLS. So definitely one of the best wingers in the league.
I think it's Hebert, by the way. We talked about Tati having to do so much, Maxi being out. Hebert was the best striker on the team until this year, right? And what he's done. Last one here, Alistair Brewer shouts to Yaimar Andrade for getting his first national team call up to Colombia at 29 years old for World Cup qualifying Vamos Sounders. It's pretty cool. Obviously comes to the U.S. for the first time. I think he said he was doing an English class when his uncle called him to tell him that he had made the Colombian national team.
Really cool.
For a World Cup qualifier alongside James and Cuadrado and this group that's been really special for Colombia. So we've got Club and Country coming back because this is a layoff that has USA, Mexico, and Canada, Mexico in it, which is not much of a layoff, and I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, we'll be. I think we're going to try to do the show on Wednesday to get it to you early, so you have plenty of time to consume ahead of Friday's match, and of course, post-game Friday and pre-game on Twitter Spaces. We will be with you live to analyze everything that happens in CONCACAF. So stick with us for Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire. That's it for us. Any thoughts, questions on the playoffs? We will get to it. 12 days now until that first game on November 20th of the Audi 2021 MLS Cup playoffs. Decision day is over. The regular season is over. On to the postseason. We will crown an MLS Cup champion on December 11th. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Thanks for getting with us live for 6 hours on decision day. Throughout this entire year, for however many years you've listened to the show, we appreciate you. We love you. We do this, well, one, because we like to talk to each other about soccer, but also for you as well. By the way, I was at dinner the other night. Guy next to us with Mindy leans over and says, "Hey, I recognize your voice. Are you Andrew Wiebe?" Nah. Big moment for the Wiebe brand in front of the wife. Oh, huge moment. So shout out to that guy
in Kansas City
at the campground.
It's a plant. It's a plant.
Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Weekend, my God. Time is that's a construct. We'll see you on Wednesday.